for some other students to join in as we start. So I am really happy and honored to have here with us the CEO of FIRA, which is, as we were discussing prior to starting this conversation, a very sui generis institution, a very effective one, a very innovative one, which links the Central Bank of Mexico with the financing of the development of the agriculture sector, which is a link you usually don't find in many other countries. Alan and I coincided when we both represented, he represented the Central Bank of Mexico and I represented the finance ministry in the boards of the 6 development banks in Mexico. He has a very long and very fruitful and successful career in publics, in the financial sector in Mexico, in the public sector. And he was actually the first generation of alumni of the Master in Economics and Finance here at the LSE. So I am really honored to have Alan here today. And he will speak to us about the key challenges that are faced by the public service that is in charge of financing agriculture. He will tell us what FIRA is and how it works, how it benefits the agro industry. But also he will touch in very interesting issues that I have discussed with him regarding to technology and artificial intelligence put at service of the agriculture sector, which is like the next trend that we might be looking into in order to create more opportunities for financing this very relevant sector for development and for growth. So without any further comments, Alan, please welcome and the seminar is yours.
Thank you, Vanessa. Good afternoon to everybody. And I would also like to thank Vanessa and also say that the years that she has been in Mexico and she was a public servant were very good years for the institution that she was in. She has left a very good example as a public servant. I'm proud to share with her generation and sometimes a common work for our institutions in Mexico. As Vanessa said, we coincided in the agricultural sector and the financing of the agricultural sector. It was very interesting to interact, being at the Central Bank and Vanessa being in the Minister of Finance. I find that in Mexico, this has given a very interesting balance to the institutions. From the Central Bank, you can bring to the table stability in terms of the solutions, long-term viability of the institutions. It will be always the voice that will try to provide sustainability, financial sustainability. And the voice of the ministry will be the one that will try to give power and go forward in the intervention. So that balance in the history of the institutions in Mexico has been actually a very good one. Today, I will talk about FIRA. FIRA is an institution that even goes one more level into this balance, because not only is it an institution that has in the board the Minister of Finance and the Central Bank, but it's managed by the Central Bank. So, for example, the institutions, a typical development institution would be one institution that all the appointments are set by the Minister of Finance. Here, the appointments are set by the Central Bank. So that gives, the Central Bank has a cycle that is mixed with the presidential cycle by 3 years. In Mexico, the presidency has 6 years. So that gives a long-term stance for the administration of the FIRA and also the Central Bank. So that is about, I will be talking, but not only about corporate governance, but also what are the challenges in Mexico in terms of why there is a case for having the government in the agricultural sector? What are the instruments that should be deployed? What type of institution is the one that is more convenient? So in Mexico, we have two experiences of development banks that work in the agricultural sector. So I think that it's interesting to share what are the benefits of one type of institution and the other. And as Vanessa said, I will invest some time in what is the next steps for FIRA in terms of the digital era, because we believe that the digital era not only will make more productive our agricultural sector, but it will also make us reach the smallholders that are in that live in Mexico and that have not been reached with the traditional tools. So I hope this injects some ideas on your work, and I come back to Vanessa to thank her for this opportunity. Let me share this document that I prepared for you, and please let me know if you can see the screen.
Yes, yes, we can.
We can.
Okay, excellent. So I will go forward. Well, this is exactly what we just talked about. I would just like to stress that I am very proud LSE alumni. Definitely the master, well, the presence in LSE, even though now that the years have passed look short because it was only 2 years, for me, those were two very important years. And you know, the vision of this university, in my opinion, is very balanced. It's a mixture of an institution that provides you tools for the private sector, but it's also a very important institution and has a strong balance in terms of public policy. So that mixture makes a very good toolbox for public servants that decide to enter into the government after being in the university. So that is something that I would like to share. Well, I will go directly to this content. So I was telling you, it is important to first clarify why there is a rationale for the public sector to be present in the agricultural sector. So every question you see here will have associated some two or three slides that I will be explaining, and why we believe the agricultural sector has market failure, and why is it important for the government to be present. What challenges does the agricultural sector pose? It is not the same to be present in the housing sector and the infrastructure. The agricultural sector is presents some challenges that are related to poverty, to the fact that it's much more remote to reach in terms of the physical presence and also the financial presence, and et cetera. The public sector institution that is needed, which instruments need to be developed to finance the agricultural sector? There is a variety. Most of them have been tested, and I will show you which ones are the ones that have shown more impact. And finally, how to embrace the technological and digital era. This, as I said, is a very, very interesting promise that we should seize and share with our sector. Okay, we start with first a short motivation of why the presence of the state is relevant. We see at least four dimensions in why this is a very relevant sector for the country. First, and we will see a graph, we have shown several times, and this is particularly relevant in the crisis, such as the one we are living and we lived last year, that the GDP growth is greatly diversified by this sector, the agricultural sector. You will see that this sector grew in 2020 while the economy as a whole diminished the rhythm of growth. It also, in the case of Mexico, is a generator of currency, foreign currency, so because we have net exports, and I will share exactly the profile of those exports. Then, and second, the sector represents a significant source of employment and induces poverty alleviation. You will see some statistics on why the employment is much more larger than the share of the production of this sector. So this talks about a very strong social impact to population. The third one is the one that provides nutrition, and one concept that is very important in Mexico, which is self-reliance in basic components of the Mexican diet, such as is the maize. And one that is become a mainstream effort in this institution is that the agricultural sector has been a lead contributor to the greenhouse gas emissions. And it's the second industry. Sometimes it's not something intuitive, but agriculture is one, is the second industry that issues more greenhouse gases. And simultaneously, this is a sector that is strongly affected by climate change. So let me enter quickly to these slides. As you can see here, this is the cycle of growth of the GDP of Mexico. I have taken an index that starts in 2012. And you can see that this index disconnect. They are not connected in 2020, but for obvious reasons. This sector was signaled as an essential sector in Mexico, so it remained working for those months that we, when after the start of the pandemic. But if you see, there is a similar effect in 2009, where the economy also had a downturn, but the agricultural sector remained stable. So that is something important. This is a sector that is convenient for the national statistics. And it's also a sector that has to remain productive for the benefit of the population. Well, as I was telling you, the agricultural products trade balance is positive. So if you take only the agricultural products, it reaches a $6 billion surplus. And if you take the products that are processed, such as the agri-food trade balance, it would go to $12 billion US dollars. So this started to show very clearly after 2014. And this is the long-term effect of the agreements that we have signed with other countries, particularly countries that are in the north of Mexico, such as the US and Canada. The interlink between Mexico and the US is very high. As you can see, the agricultural imports of the US, 25% of them come from Mexico. And most importantly, they are very dependent on the products that we produce. If you see the US fresh fruits and vegetable imports, they depend 62% on Mexico. So this is a link that has remained, and during the pandemic even increasing in share because of the continued interest that the US has had on our products. The reason is very clear. The climate is much more favorable in Mexico for fruits and vegetables, and less so for other products such as, for example, corn. And that is why one of the most important exporters to Mexico in terms of corn is precisely the US. The foreign currency sources, well, this is to just to put in context how much, what is the amount of dollars that comes to the country from this sector. It's close to $40 billion US dollars. This has been increasing through time. The same for all the remittances, that would be a comparable one. It's also $40 billion. If I'm not wrong, Mexico is the third country that has such a large amount, only after some Asian countries such as India. And then you can see the oil-related exports. This used to be much higher than agricultural exports, but now it amounts only for $17 billion. This has diminished, obviously, with the tourism industry that has gone down $10 billion in the last year. So that's why this sector is also important. It has to remain active for the benefit of the country. Well, this one also explains why the presence of the state is also relevant. As I was telling you, the agricultural sector is one of the most important industries that provides employment. So 12.5% of the workforce comes from this agricultural sector, while only 3.6% of is the GDP participation of the sector. So it's much more, it's almost four times the penetration. Obviously, these are jobs that are not as remunerated or as high as in urban areas, but then the social impact of the agricultural sector is highlighted by this statistic. This doesn't mean that the agricultural sector is low in productivity. Obviously, it is in absolute terms, but this in relative terms has been decreasing, as you can see in the labor productivity, as you can see in the graph from the right hand side, as compared, for example, to the total economy. So that's a productivity index. Well, finally, the fourth one, which is the environment degradation. You can see we here the best source of information is FAO, this UN institution. Well, it has written and has published research that is very clear about the impact of this agricultural sector in water pollution. So you have this impact. Let us not forget that 70% of the water that is consumed in countries is directed to the agricultural sector, while only 30 is directed to other purposes. Among those other purposes is human consumption. Secondly, this sector, as I mentioned, is issuer of these greenhouse gases. The typical we know is the CO2, but the agricultural sector has also the methane and nitrous oxide. Just to give you a reference, methane would be issuing these type of gases or would have the same effect of the CO2 multiplied by 60 times. So 1 ton of methane corresponds to 60 tons of CO2, and the nitrous oxide is a factor that is beyond 100. So even though these emissions might be lower than CO2, in terms of tons issued, the impact in the weather is similar or even above the one, for example, of other industries such as the transport industry. So I am talking here about air pollution, the biodiversity loss. There are several examples worldwide. One that is typical to mention has been Indonesia with the palm oil that has been grown in that country. So there is a very clear biodiversity loss. This happens in certain extent also in Mexico. There is soil degradation and salinization because of the rise of sea levels, and also an excessive water extraction. So those are problems that all of them are present in Mexico in one measure or the other. Agriculture is also highly exposed to the climate change. We can see that very clearly in Mexico. This year, there was something very atypical. So there was a frost in the northern states. So this didn't happen for 30 years. And this had a very negative impact on the crop of sorghum. The sorghum is used to feed cattle. So we lost all that sorghum. And there is an insurance industry in Mexico that helps to mitigate the impact, but those are products or financial products that will remain or will become more expensive. And the impact, well, it's already present. This year, the production of sorghum will go down significantly as compared to other years. The loss of precipitation is also present. I was just talking to Vanessa and Jemima about this year. This is a very dry year. 75% of the country has been declared as dry. So this will definitely impact certain crops. So that's another important effect. And the rise in sea levels. It is not that we will lose land, but the saline intrusion of water will affect the water that is used today to produce those crops. It is also something that has been documented, the increasing number of tropical storms and natural disasters that come from weather events. So this is also an important aspect that the public policy has to impact in order to prevent this and also try to reduce the contribution of the sector. Well, I hope this motivates the presence of the state in this sector. Now, what are the challenges that this sector is posing? Let me share these additional factors. Well, the concentration of poverty in the agricultural sector is definitely, you saw the participation in employment. Well, you can imagine that the income of those employments is lower, and those are the conditions that are reflected in Mexican statistics. I will show. It is also a matter of low productivity, particularly in the southern part of the country, where you find small holders, as the name says, this is people that holds 3, 4, maybe 5 hectares. In the northeast part of the country, northwest part of the country, you will have 30 hectares, maybe 50 hectares. But if you go to the US, to the Iowa region, those are holders that have more than 100, maybe 500 hectares on average. So the difference is also very, very related to the low productivity ratios that we have in Mexico. There is a geographic concentration of production. So if you mix this problem with the fact that there is climate change, this also poses a challenge because we would like to have a more diversification in terms of the production. Now we have a state called Sinaloa. It is the northwest of the country. If you have a climate event, such as the one we are having, like this drought, it is concentrated on that state. Well, we will lose significantly the production of corn. And as I said, corn is a very important crop for Mexican consumption. And well, finally, one that is directly related to our institution is the low rate of financial inclusion. So let me show you quickly some statistics. Here you have the rural population. This is the percentage of population that is living in poverty. So you will find that 55% is living in poverty in the rural area. By the way, I just do a mention that Vanessa was instrumental in having good measurement of poverty in Mexico. She contributed from our ministry in CEDESOL to change these standards of measuring in the years that she worked in Mexico. And then you see the contrast with the urban areas. The population living in poverty in the urban areas is 37%. So then you have this challenge. And this is a double challenge if you're talking about financing, because doing finance to the low income population is difficult because of several arguments that I will make later in this presentation. The second is that it is a very fragmented industry. The names that you see here, the E1, E2, it is the size of the rural units, business units. So E1 is the smaller, E2 is still small. You can see that in the graph on the right-hand side description. So the E2 is subsistence family, economic business unit linked to the market. And then so on, you go to up to E6, E5 and E6, which those are businesses that are more consolidated and are exporting to other countries significantly. So if you see the annual income by type of economic business unit, well, it's radically different. So my comment here is that we have a very concentrated industry in terms of the type of business unit that is producing. We would like that pie to be better shared, and also the graph on the right hand side to be not that concentrated. We would like the small business units to grow or to have a better income. So financing is an important tool. So that would be another challenge for our institution. This one has to do with concentration. So 69% of the agricultural value of production is in these states that are signaled in red. So whatever happens to those states, climatic events, would have a strong impact. We would like this graph to be better distributed. And also you will find out that the states in the southern region of Mexico are vastly represented on the right-hand side of this graph, which is also something that we will need to change. And financial inclusion, well, these are graphs that will transmit the the information that the adult population is has less access of financial products when you live in a rural area. This happens for any financial product. And if you see this graph in the next slide, you will see that this is present for saving accounts and for credit. So just to give you, on the right-hand side, people that has a formal credit, it's only 21% in the rural areas, while it is 36% in an urban area. So that's, I mean, there is a challenge in the urban area. So in the rural area is a double challenge. Well, these are some graphs about the impact of climate change in Mexico. So this one on the right-hand side, we took from some sources, sorry, from FAO, and you will find out that the impact has to do with biodiversity danger, coral reefs that are also in danger, and desertification processes. So, and the impact is signaled in orange. The vulnerability as respect to the climate change is everywhere in the country. Okay, so well, this I hope motivates the presence, and I will show you the presence. Obviously, the presence of the state has to be horizontal. It cannot only be financing, but financing is one dimension that helps to leverage the public impact in this sector. But you will need also the agricultural ministry with policies for long-term development, for example, the self-reliance in certain products, export, sanity of the products, and et cetera. So the presence of water that is sufficient, fishing, that's the presence. Actually, Mexico has at least five or six institutions that are linked to this sector, even forestry. We have a commission in forestry. And financing is one that has been present in Mexico since actually the beginnings of the century, 19th century. This institution, sorry, it would be the 20th century. In 1930, we saw the beginning of the first agricultural finance sector or banks. And the one I will be talking today to you is FIRA, which was created in 1954. So there is a long tradition of Mexico impacting this sector with financing. Some experiences are good, some others are not. I will share what are the arguments for the FIRA case, but I just want to make the case that the presence has to be horizontal and diverse, and not only in the financing side. So the relevance of the financing side will be described now. In any country, and you will see if you analyze the development banks all over the world, has a decision to make. They can set one bank, a traditional development bank. So this bank is a bank that has branches, offices all over the country, and they will provide credit directly to clients. So that's a very traditional model. We have one bank. Actually, that bank was also created in the 20th century in Mexico. That bank, what is the activity? They will provide funding directly to agricultural producers, including smallholders. The implications for this decision would be to install infrastructure to service loans directly, deploy national presence, impact segments directly. You have to deploy also credit processes that are fit to serve smallholders. And also, since you are one bank, you are competing or sharing the market with other private banks. So that is a very delicate balance, because if you lower your interest rates very much, then the private sector will exit that that market. If you go too expensive, then you don't impact that market. So typically the agreement is that a development bank will enter into the riskier part of the business, and then the private banks will enter into a larger size and lower risk part of the business. some benefits of this model. Well, it will be a direct contract with clients, or so you have a presence, it's physical presence in agricultural value chains and regions. So that's very good because you can feel the conditions that that are prevalent in the country. The second is that you have a flexibility to underwrite a high risk loan. And I will show the contrast with another model. Then the things that are risky in this model is that you absorb directly the risk. You might have also political influence in the sense that you have to finance certain sector, which is actually a very high risk, and it could threaten the viability of the institution in the long term. You have a high cost of operation because you have branches, and the diversification of your portfolio might not be as strong as if you were another type of institution. Now, this is option one. Option number two is what we call a second tier institution. I always think like Starbucks, for example. If a Starbucks had decided to sell all the coffees by itself, it would have a very different challenge buying, you know, places to sell the coffee and then deploying all the infrastructure. What the Starbucks do is to sell that model to third parties, and there will be people from the private sector that will decide to have that name Starbucks and then sell the coffee following a protocol. So this is something similar. You will have a second tier development bank. Your equivalent of coffee is agricultural loans, and then you will let financial institutions, a large number of them, work with you. You will provide products, protocols, and etc. so that you will help them to provide a high quality product to the agricultural sector. So what is the model? Well, and the implication, you have to develop a network of intermediaries. This is sometimes not very easy. However, that would depend on the instruments you offer to these institutions. You have to maintain low cost of funding, because if you elevate your funding, you are funding financial intermediaries, it has to be cheap. Your operational process is lighter than the model I just presented one slide before. And here, actually, this is maybe the most relevant point. You do not compete with the private sector. Actually, you are allies. So you need to have a strong long-term relationship with them. And all the loans that you provide have to be seen as profitable. So that is the main challenge, how to design financial products that will make these loans profitable, that will have financial institutions working with you to serve the smallholder and make this model viable in the long term. So that is exactly a challenge. I will tell you the instruments that can help you do that. Well, on the right-hand side, maybe I will not enter into detail. This presentation will be available. But then if you do this, I will enter maybe in three that are very important. The first one, since you are providing funding to all this network of financial intermediaries, that in our case is 80 financial intermediaries, then you can provide very deep products or issuances of debt. You have to issue debt to service all those financial intermediaries. So you can go to the market and have a very good issuance of debt and get very good rates to transfer to this intermediary. So that is a model that is difficult to attain or in the model I just presented one slide ago. And then the diversification of your portfolio is evidently much rich, because you have financial intermediaries that serve the smallholder, specialized in certain regions, or maybe specialized in forestry, or maybe in certain crops such as corn or sugarcane. So that's something you gain, better diversification. And then your infrastructure can be leveraged by the branch network allies. So you might have certain branches as an institution, but then you have like all the branches of these financial institutions that help you originate these loans. What are the drawbacks? Well, you will not have the direct contact with producers, and you depend on the presence of the private sector in all the segments. So sometimes it's difficult to see the private sector in those segments that are more vulnerable for the policy problem that you have in front. So let me share this. This is the theory about the development banks. So FIRA has, since 1954, is working on this second model of development. Well, this is the institution. Now, now that you have this decision made, what are the instruments that you need to develop? As I mentioned, that you have this challenge that the private sector might not want to enter to the regions or the smallholders, that because they represent a high risk, how to convince them? Well, these are the instruments that you, in summary, you will have these four instruments in one version or the other. Let me start with, well, you have funding, guarantees, a program with entities, so this is a synonym of subsidies, and then technical support. So that is a summary. Let me enter one by one. Funding. So funding is the one that is more demanded from FIRA, particularly by financial intermediaries that are small or medium size. I will not read the right-hand side, but I just will just describe. FIRA will provide a very large amount of funding to these institutions. Let me give you one example. This funding has to be very well priced. When you have volatile conditions in financial markets, funding becomes more expensive for private sector players. If they go to the market, let me, for example, in May 2020, the debt markets in Mexico dried very much. Actually, there were no issuance of debt in March and in April. I think one in March, but zero issuance of debt in April. So this this is very inconvenient for private sector players, particularly for the small and medium size, because they do not get a source of funding. So what FIRA did is that we have a large volume of debt issued in the market. We were able to issue because of the large amount of debt that is already known in the market. And since we are a quasi-government institution, then it's a lower risk for those investors that have their money and are looking for alternatives. So that made an effect that mitigated the lack of funding in the market. So FIRA took that place and provided funding with no interruption to the sector. So this instrument is very powerful when you have volatile conditions, and also ensure that those intermediaries would be able to sustain the credit train in the sector. So this is the first instrument. Banks obviously have other sources of funding, deposits from the public. Those deposits are not so volatile in crisis conditions, and they will be picking from our products maybe those fundings that are 5 years or 10 years of term, which we provide, because then it's difficult for them, the asset liability management, or maybe it's more expensive for them. So FIRA provides for large banks on the long term, but for small intermediaries, it's a significant source of funding in crisis conditions. So this is the first instrument. So that would be one that is the most important for, in terms of pesos in our balance, it's funding. The second one is one that is also, in terms of public policy, very relevant. As I told you, there is a high risk of financing smallholders, but then you can do a product, a financial product that makes this palatable to the financial intermediary. What do I mean? Well, what if maybe that loan that you will provide, you share the risk with ourselves. So when they do finance a smallholder and the smallholder defaults, then our institution can provide 50% of the amount of the loan back to the financial intermediary. That is what we call a guarantee. And these guarantees are designed precisely to impact on certain areas of the agricultural sector, most importantly, the smallholder and very remote areas where it's difficult to access. So if we provide this product, which is up to 50%, we also do not like to provide very large percentage of losses covering, then when banks decide to go forward. This product is our second product that is more demanded by financial intermediaries. And if we provide the statistics of how it is distributed in the country, you will find that this product is more present in the south of the country, as compared to, for example, funding that is more present in the northern part of the country, where you do not require risk coverage, or if you require it, it's in, on a low amount. So this is the second product. This one is used all over the world. And in Mexico, it has a representation also in other institutions that do loans to SMEs, for example. The third one is technological support. I always say that it is not the lack of money or funding that is our problem in Mexico. Then if you see the development bank sector has a strong institution, large institution with good capital ratios, then there is a capacity to leverage. Even the private sector also has this capacity. What is lacking is the number of projects that are correctly structured for them to receive funding. Sometimes we also say that there is a need for credit, but there is no demand for credit. What I mean by demand is that the project is right to be financed. Sometimes maybe there is a lack of collateral. It is typical in our country because the holding of the land is not so clear. So you can provide technical support for that smallholder to have a project that has the adequate quality, that this smallholder is adequately trained to produce that product, and it's correctly transferred the technology that is needed. One example that I use frequently is there is a company that exports coffee to Germany. So this company, gets the coffee from different regions in Mexico, but they cannot plant all the coffee they need to export. So they have to deal with smallholders in the country that will provide that coffee. But these smallholders not necessarily have the adequate plants or the adequate fertilizer or the adequate means to provide the quality of the coffee. So that is what we do. We have people in the field that will provide that technological support. And if we don't have them, we contract people and we pay for that consultant to transfer that technology so that you help this smallholder to open a market. If you open the market, then that smallholder will be able to sell the product and then he can receive a loan because he is now, he has now in front of him a bankable project. So that is a third instrument. And the last one is the one that relates to subsidies. So from time to time, the government would like to make progress in certain areas, let's say for sustainability with the weather. They would like to introduce, for example, irrigation systems. So they have a pause that will be transferred to producers. FIRA is in a privileged position to transfer that purse and maybe link with a loan to leverage those resources, and they will call to FIRA to distribute that purse of money. We have agreements with the Ministry of Economy, Agriculture, and even Forestry, and we have been transferring that money in the name of them. And this is also a process that happens with multilateral agencies. So we have that with the Agence Française de Développement, the French agency, and also with KfW, which is a German institution that is very keen to help other countries, particularly in the forestry area. So that is for us a privilege to receive a purse from European funds or German funds to transfer to Mexican producers if we impact exactly the crop that they would like to promote. So, okay, well, these are the instruments that are relevant. Let me end up this presentation with how to embrace technological and digital tools to maximize this public impact. So what is the case for technology in our model? As I told you, well, we operate in second tier. Then banks provide loans, but then sometimes we see that those loans are not in the quantity or the quality that we would like. So what are the barriers for that to happen? We have the first one we have found is the information asymmetry. That's that the banks will not know exactly what is the project they are financing. And why is that? Because these smallholders seldomly document their profitability. They don't have a financial statement. So the bank that cannot know if they are productive, if they are, what is the quality of the land, because you need the quality of the soil to produce, what are the environmental conditions. There is no credit history. The credit bureau is present in Mexico, but it is also seldom to see that the smallholders have a credit history. That is the whole point of financial inclusion, to make them live their first experience. And as I told you, there is a lack of historical income data. If you are a bank, you would like to see a time series of maybe 5 years on what is the production of grain or mangoes that this producer has been selling to the industry. And this is difficult because they do not gather database. So that is one first problem. And it will be the reason why banks decide not to go, even if we cover with our guarantee a 50% coverage. This is a strong problem. And the second one is that a bank, once they give a loan, they would like to see how is it progressing. So they have to monitor those crops. So the problem here is that those are, if you are talking about the small producer, well, this is typically happens very remotely and it's expensive to go. And if you pay an employee to go and see, well, all the expense will be higher than the income. And that is the second reason why they will not like to provide those small loans. They will prefer a large loan that is not very far from the office they have. And it's cheap to relatively cheap to service. So those are the main issues that have been a barrier in our industry. Now, let me give you what are the products that we are at this moment developing. Well, the first one is finally in the world, but in Mexico, we have access to satellite information. So the satellites are very generous in terms of what they can provide to you. The most basic satellite indicator is one that is called a net deviation vegetation index. It's very popular, but this one will read how the sunlight is reflected in the crops. So whatever there is vegetation absorbs certain infrared rays from the sun, and then the rebound of light from that crop is affected when there is a crop in the land. When there is no crop, well, the absorption is total, is null. All the light it reflects back to the satellite. So from that difference, you can see what is the degree of advancement of vegetation. And some indexes have been developed to identify what crop is present. So if you think of this index, which is a more basic one, I could talk about others, but this, you draw this in time series, then you can see if you are growing corn, then you can develop curves of development of this index and then see what are the deviations of the crop you are financing as compared to the average index for the maize crop in that region. So that is a very strong tool for you to monitor the risk of a loan that is given in a remote area, because you can do it from your desk. I'm not telling you that this will be the same of being present in that land, but I'm telling you that is 80% of what you want to know. And then satellites have other type of spectrum in terms of what they can see as compared to the human eye. So you can read the chlorophyll, the presence of chlorophyll in that area. You can read the temperature of the lower part, let's say on the soil, what is the temperature 1 meter above that. You can see what are the humidity indexes. And most importantly, you can see the progression of climatic events in that region. So the first step you need to have is a georeference. you need to go with the technology that is in your iPhone or your mobile. It is easy now to gather the geo reference of the of that land, then bring back to our institution, and then associate those indexes. So that is exactly the process where we are at this moment, gathering the geo reference. So every time you want a loan from FIRA, you need to provide the geo reference of that land. This started since last November. Now the database is growing slowly, but this is growing. And then what we are opening is a new tool that will be useful for banks to learn what are the risks he's incurring, not only today, but in time series. Well, that will be the first tool to break information asymmetries. The second one is open banking. Open banking is actually the UK is leader in this arena. This is the capacity of financial institutions or third parties to access transactional data from your accounts. Let's say you have a bank account and you authorize a third party, let's say a fintech company or a development bank such as FIRA, then that fintech institution or FIRA could access to your transactional data of your bank account. So the asymmetry of information in terms of your productivity, your income is broken, because then I can see maybe you do not have accounts that, you don't have information on your history of production as a smallholder, but you have a bank account that has recorded all the income that you associated with your crops. So in that sense, this is a second important step that FIRA is taking forward. Let me tell you that it is in the time of Vanessa in Mexico that the fintech law was started. And at this point, the fintech law is already published and is working. So this is a result of the fintech law. The third one is the type of tool that will reduce asymmetry of information in the supply of financial services. So the agriculture, the smallholder does not have information on insurance, they cannot compare products, so we can build a comparison platform for them. We can also provide a platform that will help them hedging, price hedging. So we already have one, and they can buy in Chicago, those options, products that will cover for the price of the corn or cotton. So that is something that we have developed in institutions so that we help them to access those products. And also the credit comparison platform. So they can have not only one or two offers of loans, but they can have maybe each of one of the institutions that work with us, which are 80, an offer of loans. So that platform is also helping the institution to broaden credit supply to producers. Finally, on the right-hand side, those are future prospects. We have seen in Argentina and in Mexico, this effort has already started, not by us, but by third parties, what we call a marketplace for agricultural products. So if you go to Chihuahua, northern state, we have these cotton producers that are aggregating their production of cotton, and they mount this production in a platform so that, for example, in Puebla, a southern state, we have a lot of textile production. They can buy that cotton via that marketplace. Today, the way it happens, it will be through intermediaries that take a large share of the benefit of the crop production. So those marketplaces, it is not our reason to be to development, but it is our reason to be to invite them, to help them develop that marketplace and then connect to our platform. Finally, the producer information digital platform. That is the most important one, and it's described in the next slide. Vanessa, you tell me about the time, because this will maybe take another 5 minutes, and if we are okay. Okay, well, this is the last one. In the annex, you will get more elements. But then I have been talking about elements of technology. So the first one I already described is what we call the geospatial hub. So this is the one that will bring all these indexes from satellites to us, and then we will translate that to produce in a platform information useful for the rural producer. Then we have a climate hub. We have a number of providers of information, but we need to transform this information in a way that is helpful to the producer. So we are working in that process so that this platform will have, I sometimes call it like a Netflix or a Apple TV, sorry, where you have several contents. So one content would be the geospatial hub. So the producer can see his land with these different eyes. The second content will be the climate hub. So they can see what are the climatic events in time series and what is the forecast of climate in his region. So that would be a second content. Then we can provide information layers, such as the cost of fertilizers, which we already have, the price of the crop in the markets, international markets, or economic data related to the value chains. Sometimes the small producer do not know all the economics of their business. We can provide technical assistance. This is something that has been developed in Africa, Latin America. Today we provide physical technical assistance. Obviously this has limitations, but then we can provide via this platform, if they send us images of their land, obviously we are talking about people that we have financed, we can provide back with a group of agronomists, information that is helpful for them to react to what is happening in his vicinity. We can provide access to financial services by this this platform and other additional services such as the marketplace by connecting them via APIs. So this is the way we think that we can change the information access to the rural producer, but not only information access, but also expert advice to them. That is, in summary, the project and where we see the present and the future for FIRA. And this is, if you see the model I just described at the start, a way to leverage public policy in our sector. Just to finish this presentation, well, imagine what these tools can represent if you are a bank and then you can access them directly. We have thought that it is worth for FIRA to invest in this and then share with the network of banks, and not the way that the 18 banks that we work with develop it independently. So in that sense, well, this would be the connection with the new digital era. And I think with this, I will finish the presentation. Thank you very much, Vanessa.
On the contrary, Alan, thank you so much for this very insightful presentation that we don't see interlinked as much as we should, and it speaks about not only productivity and nutrition and trade and social inclusion, but also development and climate change, poverty. So I think it was a very, as I said, insightful and thorough a presentation that we very much appreciate. I have 3 questions, but I will only make one because I want the students to participate. We already have Loani and Katie that have raised their hands. So I will ask you about something you did not refer to, and I think our students here would very much be interested in listening. Last October, FIRA issued the first gender bond. I wrote an op-ed on it, and I contacted you so you could explain to me what this was like. But I would like you to share one angle of that issuance. First, how was it conceptualized in terms of a public policy choice, a public policy decision? And what were the challenges that you faced when you first thought about issuing that gender bond? Because it was a novelty in Mexico, it was a novelty in Latin America. Did you find a reluctancy? Did you find some shareholders not supporting that proposal, perhaps saying that it was not relevant, that it was not the time? How did you leave that process within the institution of issuing such an innovative financial instrument that was gender oriented in this sector. So I would stop there with my questions, and then we will pass the word to the students so they can make their own questions. Thank you, Alan.
And now, thank you, Vanessa. Actually, it's a very interesting process. Well, just very rapidly to tell you that we didn't find any detractor on this project. It is impressive how the society in these different levels, let me talk about the investor society, embrace the idea of participating in one solution or one project to impact this sector. How did it start? Well, as I mentioned in this presentation, the rural sector has been in terms of social development behind the urban sector. But if we talk about the women situation and we take the relevant statistics, this is also the case for women. The case in the urban areas as compared to the rural sector is abysmal and different. The women are seen in the countryside as producers of work that is not remunerated and also responsible for the development of the home, of the household, which is a double task that is very, very badly remunerated. And obviously the consequence is they don't have access or very, very small access to social security services and et cetera. It's like a chain that is that builds itself and makes the problem even larger. So this problem was not discovered when we issued this gender bond. The gender bond was maybe the way to attract attention and obviously resources from the society to this problem. So the first idea behind this bond was to attract the attention of society and attract obviously financial resources. Then the challenges were to see what is the type of instrument that will help to undo this situation. So this design came before the gender bond some years before, where we saw that the everything converged to the lack of possessions or land from women. The asymmetry is very strong. 70% of the land that is registered is under the name of a man, only 30% of a woman. So how to do with that problem? Because if you don't have that land, then you don't have loans, then you don't have access to inputs, you don't have open a market, you don't, et cetera. So the first thing was to provide them. We have an instrument that is a liquid guarantee that then we associate to projects, and this is strongly used for women. So if you don't have collateral, then we tell the woman, don't worry, that we have this liquid instrument. So we set apart from a liquid fund that has a strong amount, it's close to 8 billion pesos. And then the bank can take 10% of the loan amount as a liquid guarantee. So that liquid guarantee plays the role of the collateral. If the loan goes bust, then they take that money directly and then mitigate the loss. And this instrument then starts to attract the attention of those financial institutions. But that is half of the problem, Vanessa. The other half would be how to make that woman productive in a way that the market will open. So in this case, we use the instrument of technical assistance and technological transfer. So this is even more important than the money that reaches the woman. So in this dimension, a group of consultants went to regions. Let me put the example of honey in Yucatan. So we found this company that also exports to Germany, very high quality honey. And then we formed groups, typically of women, that will receive this technical assistance for them to provide the technological standard, to provide that honey in the quality required. And not only that, it is called organic honey. So this is a certification that will open a very steady market for her. So that is the second intervention. And then once you had that, then it was easy to link those loans. We had to document following some international market capital association standards, the climate bond initiative that has helped us in the green bonds. Those standards are strong, but requires some discipline in your institution, but then the bond touched the market. Just to give you one summary of how the bond was well embraced, typically in one issuance of 3 years, we will get 1.5 times the money that we issue. You know? So you issue 300 million pesos, then you will get 450 million. If you issue a green bond from 300 million, then you will show, you will see showing up 600 million in the, when we do the bid of the of that bond. For this gender bond, it was four times. So this is 1.2 billion pesos for the 300 that we issued. So this is, it is difficult to measure the effect of the spread because it was issued when the economic conditions were very bad. But definitely this compact very much the spread of our issuance, and we were able to transfer that to the system. So that was the conception, and we will keep on doing. Now the next agenda is to make other institutions to do the same.
Thank you so much, Alan. And now I will pass on the word to Loani to make her question. And then if you can answer that, and we will follow with Katie and then Manuela. Please, Loani.
Thanks. Hi, and I'm sorry I cannot open my camera, but and also sorry that I joined halfway through. So I hope my question was not covered in the beginning, but I have two questions. One is, I guess, what is the impact of COVID to the program? I guess a lot of the banks now will be very wary of their bad loans book, and therefore they will be even more hesitant even to take 50% risk on the guarantee scheme. And at the same time, input costs like fertilizers, anything related to oil is going up for farmers. So I guess the working capital requirements are going to be ever increasing. And I guess if you give me some light how this has impacted your program. And second, I assume your institution is probably loss-making, right? Unless the loans and the guarantees you provide cover for the risk you take, probably there is some concessional repricing there. But do you have some KPIs that cover economics, but also the social impact of your organization to show that overall the socioeconomic IRR of the company is very of your institution is very positive?
Yes, Lani, nice to meet you. Well, let me start with the first one, the COVID. Well, you are right. Actually, the cost of inputs came up. Let me divide the industry in its components. The first thing to say is that this industry in Mexico was declared essential, and such was also the financial industry. So FIRA was privileged in that sense that it, because it belongs to both industry. The direct impact in our business came not from the productive process because it remained working, but it came from the liquidity conditions and the markets that manifested very, very strongly in this sector. Particularly, the liquidity, as I mentioned, went down, and there were not sources of money in that second quarter of 2020. And even our institution, which is quasi-government, had a very difficult time to access to that liquidity. So that is the main impact, but it didn't come from the productive process. Now, on your point of the cost of inputs, it definitely was a case. The markets were such that the peso jumped from 20 pesos per dollar to 25 pesos per dollar in that exact period. So maybe not from the primary producer, but yes, from those producers that transform the product, those that package them, that cut the meat, and etc. Those ones were affected because the inputs actually were very, very expensive, and then they had an impact. So what was the answer by FIRA? We opened a package that allowed to restructure debt to 5 years or 10 years. That was open to every company that would have a pressure on the cash flow. As I tell you, this is on the secondary industry, not the primary industry. and the primary industry remain the working as usual, and maybe subject to the natural conditions such as weather. So this is the impact of this portfolio. Now, your point about the profitability. Well, as I told you, the model of FIRA is to work with the private sector. So the private sector will enter whenever they see that the projects are fit. As a consequence of COVID not being an impactful event on the primary sector, such as the production of corn, of vegetables or fruit, the restructuring process was not very voluminous. Out of our portfolio, 14% of the portfolio was restructured. This doesn't mean that they went bust. Obviously, we had some companies, let's say those companies that provide food to the entertainment industry, such as cinemas or maybe hotels or restaurants, those companies went down. And what I can tell you about sustainability of our indicators, we charge a premium for our products. It's not a free product. So if you want to buy that 50% guarantee product, you have to pay 1.5% premium. Banks do pay it, and that product has remained in equilibrium. With the COVID, it went a bit down in terms of pressure, but our non-past due loan ratio went from 1.5% to 3%. So this is impactful. I will not tell you that it is. It isn't, but 3% of past due loan ratio is we consider it still something that is compatible with long-term sustainability. I'm not talking about the other type of SMEs. We have colleagues in other banks, such as NAFIN. NAFIN is a bank that finances SMEs. Bancomex is one that finances exports. And those banks had a much stronger impact. So just to tell you that this sector was benefited, not benefited, but was safe in terms of, in relative terms. And then the fact that we charge from our product, that has still remained in the positive returns for the institution. Our metric is that our capital has to grow with inflation. So far, we have maintained that growth ratio since 2013. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. So you don't try to quantify the social IRR of your institution in a way to add it to the economic one?
Yes, actually, we do impact studies from our programs. We do them exposed, and they serve to measure and to redesign those programs. So every board that we have, we present a table that has at least 13 indicators. That table will tell you how much money have we given to smallholders, how much money is given for the first experience of great financial inclusion, how much money have we given to women, how much money has been given to environmental friendly technologies, and how is our capital evolving. So those will be our indicators. If you are talking about more profound indicators on what is the change that those loans given represented for women, let's say, we do particular studies that are done maybe one each year or 2 years, and that we are exactly right now developing one to publish about the impact of loans to women, and that will be published along with our gender bond.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Katie, please.
Hi, Alan. Thank you so much for this really fascinating presentation. So my question, I was just reflecting on the latter part of your presentation in which you were explaining the new technologies that allow banks to monitor the progress of the crops and therefore assess how they're, you know, how they can expect the loan repayments to happen. And it reminded me of, I mean, these same kinds of technologies are being used to offer crop insurance, in particular, like so that in the case of a crop failing, it would then be possible to offer insurance to a particular geographical region. And obviously the financial provider that would be offering that insurance would need to be able to verify that that this was due to some kind of exogenous shock, so like a climate shock, which you were also mentioning is quite common or increasingly common in Mexico. So I was just wondering if this kind of financial service is something that FIRA considers, and if so, if not, sorry, why not?
Actually, yes, it's a very relevant question, because insurance is one of the products that is, from what we are expecting, necessary for this activity to remain productive. Insurance is also another area that Mexico has invested in the public sector. And we have an insurance company called AgroAsemex, which is the one that provides insurance for typically smallholders. This is an interesting model because they do provide it in a second tier fashion. They will reinsure private sector companies that provide insurance, and they will do it with an emphasis with what we call the fondos de aseguramiento. These are regional small funds or cooperatives of producers that gather together, and they do self-insurance. But then, in order to diversify risk, AgroAsemex reinsures those groups of producers, so that they diversify really the risk. And in the portfolio of AgroAsemex, they can diversify risk all over the country. They have actually, they are one step forward in adopting these technologies, because obviously it is more impactful for them. As in FIRA, this, we provide loans and we require insurance. Well, they are taking the first hit from a climatic event. So they have also this technology. And it's, I'm very proud to say that they are one of the first institutions to do it in Mexico. So it's a public institution. Obviously, the private sector is also entering, but it's interesting to see this case in our country.
And Manuela, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Alan, very much for this very detailed and interesting presentation. It has left me a lot of thoughts. And I was just wondering, what do you think about like the objectives of development banks such as FIRA? If there's some gap there, just looking at some of the data you showed, it seems to me like there's a very small productive, very productive sector, even above like the average economy as you showed. And then there's this like 90% of the economy that it's maybe thriving through the support development bank gives. And probably the like the smaller producers are not even being supported by all these credits because they're like the access to financial markets. And then you mentioned like the problem is not necessarily a credit constraint, but maybe the lack of a market. So I'm just wondering your thoughts about the development banks in agricultural topics, if they should focus more on creating like this dynamic market and connecting these small producers to sellers. And I don't know, I'm just very curious about how this could be rethinked in a way to help more these producers that are at the bottom. Thank you.
Well, actually, you're pointing out to the task that is more influential in a development bank such as FIRA. What is that task? How do we see it? We call it the task of developing providers. That is the name we assign to that activity, which is finding medium-sized or large-sized companies that package and transform products and then export or provide in a wholesale basis to local stores of products from the agriculture. So what we do is we try to go with them and then ask for the requirements in terms of the quality of the product And then we do a work of looking for local producers and then tie them together. This is, on our opinion, a long-term process that if the producer keeps the discipline, will keep them with a market open. But then just to go to your question more in terms of more of public policy, we do that because this is the way that you can establish a long-term activity between the producer and the market, and also because it is necessary to attain a degree where you can be financed. So that is why we are there, because it's influential, and then because it's a necessary condition for financing. But it is important to consider that there are other institutions in the agricultural sector. For example, the Ministry of Agriculture. One of the programs that was successful 4 years ago was one that would create public goods. Let me call a public good, for example, a packaging facility in the middle of the field that is owned by a medium size or large size company. So what the government will do, they will provide a one-time subsidy, let's say 4 million pesos, for a facility that is worth 16 millions. So this businessman will develop that packaging facility. So once you have that packaging facility, then all smallholders of strawberries, see, this is an example I saw in strawberry. They will say, okay, now I do not go to the highway to sell my strawberries. And Vanessa must recall all these sellers of strawberries in Mexico that sell their product in the highway. So you stop your car, you buy strawberries and then go. That was a large part of the selling process of smallholders. Now with this packaging facility, then you can aggregate production from smallholders in the region and then put that into a big truck and then send to the US or to the industry, Mexican industry. So that public good, which is this packaging facility, is only one example of several. Let's say those, I don't know how to translate the rastro, but this is the place where animals are killed and then processed so that you can sell them in boxes and meat. So this happened also with the rastros and happened with other facilities that create maybe not exactly a public good, but a public infrastructure that can be used to leverage. So this is a work that has to come from other players, public players in the industry. And this is an example that was played by the Ministry of Agriculture. Another example is also an effort from this Ministry of Agriculture to map what is the almacenamiento, which is the, how will you say, all these, for example, the grain, when you gather together the grain, then you need to hold it in certain very safe areas and that also conserve the grain. So a mapping of that infrastructure has been made in the country by the Ministry of Agriculture. And then the program comes back to us to help finance that infrastructure. But just to mention that it is not, for us, it is very clear that we have to impact that. And we do that because this is one of our instruments to provide more credit. And we believe that this is a long-term solution for smallholders. But this has to come from a larger view from the Ministry of Agriculture for us to provide this essential input, which is the credit.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, dear Alan, for a fascinating presentation, as it was portrayed by one of our students that had to leave. As I told you, they're in the middle of presentations and exams, but I am really glad that we were able to have you here today with such a thorough presentation on the model of FIRA that I'm sure it's a very interesting model to be replicated in other latitudes. Perhaps not only as a government-led institution, or not even one that falls in the umbrella of the central bank, but you can think about the replication of the concept in many other varieties perhaps of options, but having the core of its mandate at the objective, at the center of the objective. So thank you so much for being here at your school, the LSE, at the School of Public Policy. And I am really happy that this was recorded, because I am sure many more students will benefit from this presentation in the coming days, and Jemima will help us to share that with the whole of the school. So thank you so much. Have a great afternoon in London, a great morning in Mexico, and see you soon. Thank you.
See you soon. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gracias.
Bye.
Bye.